I have said that Joseph knew by heart some pretty Babylonian verses which originally came from a written tradition of great extent and full of lying wisdom. He had learned them from travelers who touched at Hebron, with whom he had held speech in his conversible way, and from his tutor, old Eliezer, a freedman of his father, not to be confused, as Joseph sometimes confused him, and even the old man himself probably enjoyed doing, with that Eliezer who was the oldest servant of the original wanderer, and who once had wooed the daughter of Bethuel for Isaac at the well. Now we know these verses and legends. We have texts of them, written on tablets found at Nineveh, in the palace of Ashurbanipal, king of the universe, son of Asarhaddon, son of Sennacherib. Some of them, preserved in graceful cuneiform characters on grayish-yellow clay, are our earliest documented source for the great flood, in which the Lord wiped out the first human race on account of its corruption, and which played such an important role in Joseph's own personal tradition. Literally speaking, this source itself is not an original one. These crumbling tablets bear transcriptions made by learned slaves only some 600 years before our era, at the command of Ashurbanipal, a sovereign much addicted to the written word and the established view, an exceeding wise one, in the Babylonian phrase, and by a zealous accumulator of the fruits of exceeding wisdom. Indeed, they were copied from an original a good 1,000 years older, from the time, that is, of the lawgiver and the moon-wanderer, which was about as easy or as hard for Ashurbanipal's tablet writers to read and to understand as for us today a manuscript of the time of Charlemagne. Written in a quite obsolete and undeveloped hand, a hieratic document, it must have been hard to decipher. Whether its significance was wholly honored in the copy remains matter for doubt. And then this original. It was not actually an original. Not the original, when you come to look at it. It was itself a copy of a document out of God knows what distant time, upon which, then, though without precisely knowing where, one might rest as upon a true original, if it were not itself provided with glosses and additions by the hand of the scribe, who thought thus to make more comprehensible an original text lying again who knows how far back in time. Though what they probably did was further to transmogrify the original wisdom of his text. And thus I might go on, if I were not convinced that my readers already understand what I mean when I speak of coulisses and abysses. The Egyptians expressed it in a phrase which Joseph knew and himself used on occasion, for although none of the sons of Ham were tolerated in Jacob's tents because of their ancestor, the shamer of his sire, who had turned black all over, also because Jacob entertained religious doubts on the score of the morals of Mizraim, yet the eager-minded lad had often mingled with Egyptians in the towns, in Kirjath Arba, as well as in Shechem, and had picked up this and that of the tongue in which he was later to bear such brilliant witness. The Egyptians, then, speaking of something that had high and indefinite antiquity, would say, "It comes from the days of Set," by whom, of course, they meant one of their gods, the wily brother of their Marduk or Tammuz, whom they called Osiris the Martyr, because Set had first lured him into a sarcophagus and cast it into the river, and afterwards torn him to pieces like a wild beast and killed him entirely, so that Osiris, the sacrifice, now ruled as Lord of the Dead and everlasting King of the lower world. From the days of Set. The people of Egypt had many uses for the phrase, for with them the origins of everything went back in undemonstrable ways into that darkness. At the edge of the Libyan desert, near Memphis, hewn out of the rock, crouched the colossus and hybrid, 53 meters high, lion and maid, with a maiden's breasts and the beard of a man, and on its headcloth the kingly serpent rearing itself, the huge paws of its cat's body stretched out before it. Its nose was blunted by the tooth of time. It had always crouched there, always with its nose blunted by time. And of an age when its nose had not been blunted, or when it had not crouched there, there was no memory at all. Totmes the Fourth, golden hawk and strong bull, king of Upper and of Lower Egypt, beloved of the goddess of truth, and belonging to the 18th dynasty, which was also the dynasty of Amun, is satisfied, by reason of a command received in a dream before he mounted the throne, had had the colossal statue dug out of the sands of the desert, where it lay in great part drifted over and covered up. But some 1,500 years before that, King Cheops of the 4th dynasty, the same, by the by, who built the great pyramid for his own tomb and made sacrifice to the Sphinx, had found it half in ruins. And of any time when it had not been known, or even known with a whole nose, there was no knowledge at all. Was it Set, who himself hewed out of the stone that fabulous beast, in which later generations saw an image of the sun god, calling it Horus in the Mount of Light? It was possible, of course, for Set, as likewise Osiris the sacrifice, had probably not always been a god, but sometime or other a man, and indeed a king over Egypt. The statement is often made that a certain Menes, or Horus Menes, some 6,000 years before our era, founded the first Egyptian dynasty, and everything before that is pre-dynastic. He, Menes, having first united the two countries, the upper and the lower, the papyrus and the lily, the red and the white crown, and ruled as first king over Egypt, the history of which began with his reign. Of this statement probably every word is false. To the penetrating eye, King Menes turns out to be nothing but a coulisse. Egyptian priests told Herodotus that the written history of their country went back 11,340 years before his era, which means for us about 14,000 years, a reckoning which is calculated to rob King Menes's figure of all its primitiveness. The history of Egypt alternates between periods of discord and impotence, and periods of brilliance and power, epochs of diverse rulers or none at all, and epochs of strongly concentrated power. It becomes increasingly clear that these epochs alternated too often to make it likely that King Menes was the earliest ruler over a unified realm. The discords which he healed had followed upon earlier unification, and that upon still earlier disruption. How many times the older, earlier, again are to be repeated, we cannot tell, but only that the first unification took place under dynastic deities, whose sons, presumably, were that Set and Osiris, the sacrifice, murder, and dismemberment of the latter being legendary references to quarrels over the succession, which at that time was determined by stratagem and crime. That was a past of a profound, mythical, and theological character, even to the point of becoming spiritualized and ghost-like. It became present, it became the object of religious reverence, in the shape of certain animals, falcons and jackals, honored in the ancient capitals, Buto and Nekeb. In these, the souls of those beings of primitive time were supposed to be mysteriously preserved. From the days of Set. Young Joseph relished the phrase, and I share his enjoyment, for, like the Egyptians, I find it most applicable, and to nearly everything in life. Wherever I look, I think of the words, and the origin of all things, when I come to search for it, pales away into the days of Set.